The Survivor Specialists are back, and today we have our episode 12 predictions and power rankings for Survivor Season 50. Somehow, some way, we only have two episodes left of this crazy season, and I have Owen Knight coming to you from the corner of the house that was allotted to him. He now has a child, and this is what he gets. Owen, how you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, tucked in my Harry Potter closet here. No, there's more here. It's just a total mess. So you're panned over to the corner with my old Survivor water bottle. I've got a fake immunity necklace up there somewhere. But yeah, man, life is good. My daughter Lenny is 7 months old now, so definitely haven't been watching this season as closely. You know, every time I'm watching, I'm listening, tending to her, but it's been a fun season. You know, I certainly had some feelings about the cast going in and was disappointed for some of my friends who didn't make the cut, but it's been a fun ride and it's picked up steam here. And it's been enjoyable. And I mean, just there's a lot of great gameplay happening too.
Yeah. I'm excited to dive into this now that we're down to final seven and all of that, but yeah, this is the first time. So Owen, I told you this beforehand, but I finally got my stuff from the movers. So this is the first time I'm podcasting in this room. So forgive me. I need to figure out what to do with this mirror behind me. Maybe I'll be in a Harry Potter corner at some point. Yeah. I don't love having the mirror that's just bouncing off, but here we are. And Owen, you mentioned the cast right off the bat. And I feel like now we're down to the final seven. You've seen 11 episodes play out. You've gotten to like watch it, knowing that none of your 43 people were out there, which is bullshit. And you and I will never get over it. And I defend you guys relentlessly. But how are you feeling about the cast overall? Like, did it mesh as well as you wanted? Was it superior to what you expected? How are you feeling?
Yeah, good question. I think definitely better than I expected. I mean, I was one of the people who was a little, maybe too hard on Rizzo and Savannah. You know, I was obviously bummed for like Jesse from my season, Omer from 42. And then you think about like Carolyn or Shan or just some of these people. And it's always different having back-to-back players, and it's nothing new. I mean, we had James and Amanda, we had Rupert, like the list goes on, Russell, obviously. But just to me, having only seen the trailer and not loving the Riz God character at that time, just from the first 15 seconds, I was like, oh, I don't know. But then they really impressed me over the course of 49, even though it wasn't necessarily my favorite season. I felt they both deserved to be there. And then the chemistry of the cast, hit or miss. You know, there were certain people I was really excited to see back who kind of fell a little flatter than I was expecting. And partially, I'm sure some of that is the edit, so I don't want to give them too personally hard of a time. And then some of it is maybe who they ended up aligning with or the play style. Like, you know, people have been clamoring for Chrissy to come back for years and years, and I feel like she totally got shafted in the edit. And, you know, to be fair, I'm not a huge fan of the whole honor and integrity thing, and that's the crew she found herself with. So bit of column A, bit of column B. But yeah, there's a few missed opportunities. I was just thinking about in chat BCC, I know you're over there. They were talking about like what vote out gutted you the most across all seasons. And I was thinking back to Malcolm in Game Changers and like, where's Malcolm? You know, like why? Like on the flip side, Ozzy, what a pleasant surprise. I've loved this Oscar version of him and really, really great arc and obviously disappointing the way he went out. But to me, in my head, I was like, we don't need Ozzy version 5. Give me Malcolm again. He got kind of screwed last time, but I could go on all day about the mix. But the short version is I've enjoyed it a heck of a lot more than I thought I would. How about you?
I mean, Ozzy is the biggest surprise for me. And I know Ozzy's all beat up now. And I know he was upset in a lot of his exit press, and he was talking, you know, he's very, very honest about, you know, I've been thinking about this nonstop for a year of just, why didn't I play my idol? Just get up and do it. And I get it. Like, you make a mistake, and obviously this isn't some like life altering in a negative way mistake, but this is one of those like, hey, like you lost a game that you could have won had this happened. And so I think Ozzy was the biggest surprise for me, because I always knew I was going to be upset when Colby went, and the way he went really hit me. It really got me.
Yeah.
Ozzy, I could have given two craps that he was on this season. I was rolling my eyes at him being there. I did not want him there at all. I thought there were so many better options. I thought there were better archetypes of Ozzy, like a Malcolm, that would have made more sense on this season. And man, that was the most emotional exit other than Colby's I had this whole season. It hit me. Yeah. I was devastated for him. I was sitting there with my jaw on the floor going, that guy was going to win the $1 million had he gotten past this. Like, I really think either him or Suri wins Survivor 50 if he gets past this vote. Because at that point, they're just down in numbers. Aubrey's gone. It's a lot of new era people. And there's so many advantages and twists still in the game. I really feel like this was Ozzy's game to lose. And it really is the story of how Ozzy lost Survivor, I feel like, up to this point. And now I feel like we need to get the story of whoever wins Survivor, because we haven't necessarily gotten that story for most of the season.
Yeah. It has been an interesting thing to parse through, because, like, to me, a lot of the season has been the story of Ceree, right? And the question ultimately in my head was going to come down to, is Ozzy going to cut her at the very end or not? You know, is he going to be, I would be honored to lose to Ceree, like he said in some of his exit interviews, or is he going to, like, do what he has to do to take home the now $2 million and, you know, take her out in fire or something like that? So that was shaping up to be this really, like, the pinnacle of the season and having it all come to a head. And now my question is, like, how is Ceree going to get out of this? Because, like, this is hugely detrimental to her game, having him gone. You know, maybe now there could be some question marks about her relationship with Rizzo, potentially. Like, she was so well insulated. It was maybe 2 weeks ago on the Christian boot, the episode, Ceree had, like, laid out her whole, like, game structure and how her web was just connected with everyone. And obviously she's made certain choices and has narrowed down the field. But now the question for me is going to be, like, can she pull it off? Because, like you said, they aren't really telling the story of who else could win. Like, how did Tiffany get in so good with Ceree? They really haven't told that story. I think if she was the winner, I feel like the edit would be, you know, hammering home much more of an underdog, scrap your way from the bottom, a la, like, Denise Stapley kind of situation or something. Aubrey's picking up some steam, but I mean, the first half of the season, the edit was a bit strange for her. We're checking with Jonathan a lot. Joe, to me, edit wise, is kind of out of contention. So it's a little, I'm not sure where we go from here, honestly, but I'm with you. I mean, I loved vulnerable Ozzy, hearing him talk about his deceased father, hearing him just, like, you know, you can see, like, the pain and the fear of kind of going through it again. And then it happens. It's hard. And those exit interviews were hard to watch because, you know, even though I knew I had, like, a 0.5% chance of winning the game at the end, like, there are still times I'll catch myself thinking, like, oh, maybe I should have answered that question better. Maybe I should have done this. And, like, it really does stay with you. And thank God there's therapists now with Survivor. But yeah, I do feel for him.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you here. And, to tell Devins all of this information and Devins be the one who's blubbering the most during this moment. We didn't really talk about that in any of our episodes before, but I think that was probably, like, one of my favorite scenes of last episode. And we always get more into the strategy. Where do you think things are going? What's the edit? You know, all of that. But that one right there, I really, really did enjoy so much of watching Ozzy open up in a way we've never seen Ozzy open up in four other seasons of Survivor. And then Devin just be like, I'm the worst person to be telling this, as he's just, like, sobbing, because it shows the other layers of Devin's too. And I think that's why Devin's is one of my all-time favorite characters in Survivor history. No exaggeration. Like, he's up there in, like, my top 15, maybe even higher. And when I sit there and I watch Devin's play, you have the chaos, you have the backstabbing. He wants to make a big show at Tribal. He wants to do all this. Then you also get this side of Devin's, like, the dad that is Devin's. And we haven't gotten to see that version of Devin's a lot on the show because he's constantly playing with his back against the wall, maybe to his own fault a lot of the time. But when you actually get this moment of quiet where you're able to hear Devin's talk about his family and all that, I sit here and I'm like, damn, Devin's is playing Survivor again. And, like, if Devin's ends up being that guy who's a 4.0 or 5.0 player, I'm okay with that because he's earned his spot here. As that guy. And I want you to speak on Devin's for sure, but I have to ask this question to you because it's the one I asked Will on our recap episode. Is there a world where both Devin's and Ceree make the finale?
Where they both make the finale?
So they both survive this week.
Oof. I don't think so. Unless Rick finds another idol, I feel like he's not to get ahead of myself, but I mean, I feel like he's target number one. He seems to be such a big source of the attention right now. And I think them two are the biggest fish left. And, you know, obviously the players don't see the edit while it's happening, but, you know, they're such big characters on the screen. And I completely echo what you said. Like, he's just such good television. You know, you think about the players that are not only fun to watch from, like, they're watching their brain work, but just, like, the way they engage with the camera and the way they tell a story. And, like, he's just fun, you know, and he's one of those people that like, despite his style, I still love him. You know, I think there's a lot of people who could be as bombastic as he is that I would find annoying in some way, shape, or form. But to me, he's just like a kid on Christmas morning, you know, like he's just, there's this giddiness about him that just, like, you know, oozes through the screen that is just so contagious. And you can just tell he's having fun. And like you said, like, sometimes it's like by his own fault that he's has his back against the wall, but like, he's one of those players that is so comfortable in that situation, which is strange. Like, playing from the bottom, it is different. And I had to do it a lot, which I did not necessarily want to do, but it almost frees you up because you only have so many choices, right? When you've got just like, I either need to figure something out or go home. Like, there's really not as many, like, you don't have the same decision paralysis as someone like Suri might have. But no, he's excellent, but I am worried for him. Cause here's the thing too, the challenges they've had have been all these goddamn standing around challenges. No. And he's like really good at puzzles. Like, he's got it like a unique skill set. Like, that's why he won, what was it, 4 on EOE? Yeah. Like, he's good at the carnival games. He's good at puzzles. Like, he's kind of sneaky athletic. And yet, you know, clearly balance is not his forte here. So I'm curious if they get more of an obstacle course puzzle, sandbag, ring toss, something, if he might have a better chance at bailing himself out here.
Yeah, I have noticed that with the individual challenges. They've been pretty one note this season. And it's very interesting because they're starting to go that route a lot. Like, we were talking about it with somebody, and I forget who it was, but I think it was last season. And they said, it seems like the even numbers are all upper body strength and the odd numbers are all lower body strength, which is why you see Joe win 4 immunities. And then you see Savannah win 4 immunities. And who's Savannah competing with? It's Sophie Segretti. Who's Joe competing with? It's David Kinney. Like, they're constantly doing upper body. This season, I can't say that it's just strictly upper body or strictly lower body, but I agree with you. It's a lot of balance, and Devin's isn't going to outbalance you. And I'm all for an endurance challenge, but make it a real endurance challenge. Like for me, last week we were talking about with the challenge where they made everybody go to 1 foot, and obviously it had the no foot lifted hurt across the world here from Tiffany. But at the same time, it's like, at that point, that's random luck, right? Like, who can stand, who gets to their foot at the right time, a swell doesn't hit them, or they have just enough balance more than somebody else. Like, that's not a true endurance challenge. Like, I think about Last Gasp, which you essentially broke, and you might be the reason we don't get these endurance challenges anymore. But like, that's a challenge where eventually everybody's going to get out unless they make it just, they didn't drown you guys. That was essentially what happened. And so when you get something like that, that's different. But do a real endurance challenge if you're going to do a real endurance challenge, because that gives Rick Devens a chance to win. That's the reason Christian Hubicki beat Alec Merlino back in the day, or Ty beat whoever it was he beat. Like, give one of those where it's like, can you just suck it up? And that doesn't mean give them a perch this big for their feet, because that's also not a true endurance challenge. Jonathan and Devens aren't going to win those. But that's the one thing that I think has been missing from this season. And that's why I do worry for Devens. Like, how does he beat Joe and Jonathan in these challenges? I just,
Tiffany, she's a beast too. Like, there's some really good challenge performers. And I mean, that's why, like, Hand on a Hard Idol is the best challenge ever, because it's just pure desire. Like, who wants it more? Like, that's it. That's the challenge. Like, maybe if you have like plantar fasciitis or something, you might be at a disadvantage, but ultimately, like, it's an even playing field. Same with Last Gasp, you know, like, it's just a, you know, who's willing to put themselves through the shittiness for as long as possible. Yeah. And like, these balance ones, I just wish they would mix it up, but I digress. It's so all that to say, I am nervous for Devens.
And Hand on a Heart Idol, do you think Jesse completely put the final nail in his coffin and he's definitely not playing Survivor anymore because he touched his damn knee?
That was so hard to watch. I didn't even know he was doing that. He didn't tell me beforehand or anything. And then so I saw that, for those who don't know, the premiere thing in New York, they did the Tommy Smokes, some other influencer, and then Sophie B and Jesse did Hand on a Heart Idol for a trip to Fiji, and he lost to freaking Tommy Smokes. And he might be done. I don't know. He's got a good relationship with Mr. Beast. I think he could probably make more than $1 million that way if he keeps him and Gio keep it going.
Seriously, this better not, I'm saying this is for you, Jesse. It better not be like a child star thing where all of a sudden Gio's like, my dad took my money. That's Gio's money, Jesse. I'm just saying, Mr. Beast is giving it to him. So
we're watching you.
Exactly. We all know now, it's been said on this podcast. There's 100 people listening, so they all know. I agree. And we'll see what ends up happening with Devens and Suri and all that. You know, Suri has never won immunity. I had Kyle Durrett on, who does the Matt Chat, another YouTube channel. And he was saying that Suri has done like 26 or 27 immunity challenges now and has not won a single one, which is astounding to think about. Like, and then I don't even think that takes into account that she's lost Final Four Fire Making twice, if you count Australian Survivor. So she's such a non-entity there that it's like, okay, how does she protect herself now without an extra vote, without Ozzy? She's lost the biggest shield she had left in the game. And for me, what would make this finale fun is if we went in with Suri, Aubrey, and Devins all still there. And and the reason I say that is because, one, I love the pre-40 seasons. And these are the people I was rooting for anyway. But those, to me, feel like still the three front runners to win. Jonathan feels like he has a shot. But, like, Tiffany and Joe's edits have been so not good that I want one of them to finish seventh place, because then I'm rooting for Suri, I'm rooting for Devins, and really if anybody else wins, I'm still happy. But I got a full, if you get a full season of Devins and Suri, you can't really ask for much more.
It's good TV. Survivor. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And as you say that, I think it this week, this final seven could come down to Aubrey here. You know, you're looking at it, you've got Suri and Rizzo are still together, and then Suri and Tiff seem to have a good relationship, so theoretically that's a three there. And then Aubrey and Jonathan have been building a relationship. Jonathan and Joe, like, they're kind of in a rocky place. And then, you know, where is Devins in this? Like, it could be Aubrey could end up being in the swing position here, and I wonder which way she would go. So I don't know. It's tough. But yeah, I would love for all those, the people you mentioned, to make it the whole way, because they've definitely had the most intriguing storylines here. Rizzo has kind of fallen off the face of the earth the past couple of weeks. And I think just his body's just like, he just can't. I don't know how he did it. You know, props to him for doing such a quick turnaround. But, you know, all that Survivor and back-to-back succession with, what, 9 days in between. And he's a pretty, you know, skinny guy to begin with. Like, that's tough. Like, I don't even know how I would handle it. And I was probably had 40 pounds on him, you know? So it's tough. So yeah, I wonder, I'm curious about Rizzo, because like they were showing us a lot of him early game, early merge. And then just a couple weeks ago, he was just like not there at all. And I just, someone was saying they thought Suri cooked so much rice because she wanted to make sure Rizzo was fed, and she had faith that production would provide more if necessary because Rizzo was getting so skinny. Like, I don't know if he's just like out of gas. So,
I mean,
we'll see how he holds up.
It could be the case for sure. I mean, there's a lot of people who could beat up Rizzo, but day one Rizzo would absolutely decimate day 50 Rizzo, or whatever day he is on right now. Like, it was, he posted the one picture and he was like, Chad, I used to be jacked or something like that. And it's just like, you know, look, I got no arms either, so I'm not one to talk, but you see him sitting there, you're like, okay, this is like a very normal looking guy. It's really giving the Spencer from Cambodia.
Yes.
Where he was there on day one of Cagayan, and then you look at him on day 39 of Cambodia, and you're like, oh my God, this poor guy. And Cambodia was obviously such a devastating locale. But yeah, I think Rizzo's really been through it. I also think what the problem is, Rizzo paired up with two of the most compelling characters in Survivor history, which is Ozzy and Suri. So if you have to choose to go with Ozzy or Suri or go with Rizzo, I think the editors, like 99.9% of the time, are going to choose Ozzy and Suri just because.
Just because, yeah, they've got a legacy to uphold. Yeah, but he's been great. He's really has been. Like, I really went into all of this not wanting to like him, like actively looking for reasons to poke holes. And like, he's great TV. He's a nice guy. I've met him in person, and he was actually wonderful. And just like, I had it wrong, you know. Like, the Riz God is definitely like a bit that he does, and the real Rizzo is like a really sweet, endearing kid. And yeah, no, I'm a fan, and he definitely has earned his stripes. He's a great player, but yeah, just a tough spot to be in with the Wizard of Oz having two bona fide legends, and he's on his way. You know, he's earning his due, but yeah, just tough from an edit standpoint.
We'll see Rizzo again, especially if they start doing returning player seasons like crazy, which I think they will in the 50s. I think we'll see Rizzo again. And now I believe that it was Rizzo's move, because once Rizzo found out about all the information with Ozzy, that it was going to be Ozzy, he could have tapped Ozzy on the shoulder. He could have told Ozzy before Tribal, play your idol. He could have done anything. He just chose not to. So how does Rizzo come back to camp this week talk to Ciri, say, this is what happened. Like, because you had mentioned earlier, you know, Ciri and Rizzo are still together, but are they still together? Or do you think that Rizzo's caused permanent damage here? And if he has, where does Rizzo turn at that point?
That's a really good question. Because, yeah, the whole reason Rizzo allowed it to happen or wanted it to happen was because he heard, you know, Ozzy's final vision was to go to the end with Ciri and not him. So, yeah, how do you say that to Ciri, right? Like, that's a really good question. I actually don't know. And I don't remember enough of the scramble to see kind of the order of operations and how that went down. But, you know, he could, if he wanted to, kind of try to like tuck his tail and pretend that it's like, Ciri, there was nothing I could do. My hands were tied. They had the numbers. Like, I tried to tell him, but he, you know, he wanted to risk it one more round. And, you know, she can't corroborate that at the moment. And so maybe he can get away with that and try to get in with her and then strike at fire making or whatever. But I really don't know. I'm unclear on how, where he goes from here. Cause yeah, if he was so upset with Ozzy, does he, I guess, are they jockeying for position to be Ciri's number one, I guess is the question. Yeah. Or is he trying to kind of usurp the throne in a way and maybe pick up someone like Devin's and try to like make something happen to upend the power structure. So I'm curious where his head's at. I'm not exactly sure. Do you have a leading theory?
For me, he can't really make the argument of Ciri, there was nothing I could do, because what he could have done is tell Ozzy, play your idol. You know, that's what that hurts him.
Yeah.
And Ciri's too smart to let that happen. I mean, Ciri puts everything together because Ciri is like the one of the smartest people to ever play Survivor. For me, though, it comes down to who does Rizzo think he can beat at this point? And I think that's what everybody's thinking now at Final Seven. And I think what's interesting about this cast, if you weren't looking at Tiffany's edit early on and you just looked at each of the players individually, everybody thinks that they can win the game. And I think everybody actually has a legitimate argument. Even Joe. Joe just has to. The problem for Joe is if he sits next to Jonathan, he's going to be making the same argument as Jonathan. And everybody's going to respect Jonathan's game so much more than Joe's, which is ultimately going to lead to Jonathan beating Joe. But everybody has an argument to make. But you can't beat Ciri. And you probably can't beat Devin's. Like, I know that some of the antics with Devin's will be unpopular with the jury. But for the most part, like, you see Devin's flip a coin to go heads or tails, the balls it takes to do that, even if you know you're the person going home, and then to turn around and like survive and somehow get to the end, they're giving him $1 million. Like, he needs six votes. He's getting six votes if that happens. So I think it comes down to who do you think you can beat? And I know we're going to do the power rankings for this week, but like right now, if you were to say like, look, I'm Owen. I get to the end of the game against X and Y. I win no matter what. But if Gabler gets to the end, you know, then it's like, okay, Gabler beats, you know, like that's that kind of thing right now. Like, who is at the top of that pyramid for you and who's at the bottom of that pyramid?
Good question. Ciri's at the top for sure. I think she beats anybody no matter what, if she gets there. But then of course she has one of the biggest ifs and she can't win a challenge. I think towards the bottom, I think it's got to be Joe, right? I mean, you could make the argument that a lot of his friends are on the jury, but it even seems like that people that were working with him are not huge fans of his play style and just the way that, you know, he has been on the season. And it's so interesting for me, and I talked about this with Fishback a couple weeks ago, but Joe seems like the sweetest human being on the planet. Like, he seems like such a good guy, seems like a good hang, you know, go grab a beer with him. I'm sure you'd have a blast, but like his moral code and the way that he feels that other people should adhere to it or like, you know, have the same vision of their own play style must be challenging to work around and to play with. So I think he's low on the list. And I think to no fault of his own, Rizzo has to be low on the list, honestly, partially just due to his age, especially like, I mean, I'm 33 and I would have a hard time giving someone in their mid early 20s $2 million. Like, I don't want to fucking ruin their life. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like I would be more inclined to give it to someone who's like has kids or like, and I know like before y'all flame me, like this isn't my only consideration, but like it's part of it. Like it's a life-changing amount of money, especially now that it's doubled thanks to Mr. Beast. And like, you know, a young person would really objectively had to have played the best game for me to even consider, you know, that part, like to make me feel good about that. Because like, not to say like, oh, you know, you don't know what you're doing with that money, young whippersnapper. But just like, I don't know, it's just a harder sell, especially to, you know, someone like Chrissy, who's in her 50s and is like a financial, she's an actuary. And like, she's, you know, I just feel like she would have a hard time giving it to someone so young and so young presenting as well. Yeah. Maybe I'm projecting, but that's like, I feel like he's a got an uphill battle in that sense.
Yeah.
So that leads me to the question, what's he planning to do with his idol? Because I feel like that's his last, you know, that's going to be his big shebang. Like, I feel like in his head, I wonder if he's like trying to set the table for him to like make his exclamation point move at the last possible second, play that idol in the most like, you know, explosive way possible, and then pull out the win, you know, and give it the best chance he has heading into Final Tribal. So I'm curious what his move is from there.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talk about this all the time with idols, and there's certain people who can get away with not playing idols or not doing anything with their idol and just, you know, get by. But Rizzo has to play this idol correctly. Like, I don't know if he wins 49 because he never played the idol correctly. Like, he even admitted that. We did the exit interview and he was like, I don't know. He's like, I think I could win, but I think if it's me, Savannah, and Soph Bellarity might actually win that season. And so that's what's interesting about the idol at this point. And I hear you about the age thing because, you know, if you play a great game, if there's no question about it, people aren't going to say, no, you can't have the money. I mean, look at Todd. Then again, Todd was against one of the youngest final threes of all time. Fabio, same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you go look at Aris. Aris sits next to Danielle. That's easy. But I do think that in these returning player seasons, because they skew so much older, there's right. two things that Rizzo really has working against him. One is his age, but two is just the fact that he played in the 40s. Because I do feel like there's some of these older school players, and I know it's going to make Owen mad, and he wants to go. He said, guys, before you flame me here, but he's about to go flame all these other people. It's like when you hear people like Coach and like Chrissy and like other people saying, I want to give it to somebody who played pre-40. Like, I talk to Troyzan a lot. I don't think Troyzan, he could have been best friends with the person from the 40s. If he has an option to vote for somebody from the 30s, he's going to vote for somebody from the 30s just because it's almost like it's not even that it's anti players from the 40s. It's really anti what Survivor is in the 40s. And that seems to be what it is. It's like territorial. You know what I mean? And I think that's mm-hmm. hurting Rizzo, because I think a lot of the jury right now, if you look, you have Christian, you have Coach, you have Chrissy, you have Stephanie, right? Now you have Ozzy. You're probably going to have Suri at some point. I mean, you have at least six people from pre-40 sitting on that jury. It only takes six people to win. If they all have the group think of, I'm not voting for anybody who played 26 days, no way. It didn't matter what you did. And I mean, it doesn't help also that he's 26 or 27 years old and he, you know, people don't want to give the money to that. But yeah, it's very interesting, the dynamics at play right now, because in Heroes Villains, you didn't have this territoriality of old school versus new school. This season, mm-hmm. I do feel like there's some. I don't feel like it's been a storyline on the season, but I think it's been in the back of people's minds as they're playing the game.
No, certainly. And that feeling definitely exists. I mean, I think that's part of the reason why a lot of new era people have become so close, is because we feel like a younger sibling, you know, like curse on us. You know, it feels like we're the stepchildren of Survivor sometimes. And I think there are some players, and everyone's perfectly nice, but I think there is an undertone of like, oh, you kids don't know what the real thing is like, you know. And it's, to be fair, like, we don't know what 39 days is like. But is it our fault? No. Like, sorry, I would have loved to have played 39 days, but and I don't think my experience is any like less than, but it is different. And so yeah, I could see that manifesting. I would hope not, but I could absolutely see that. Like, yeah, we're going to stick it to these new era punks and make sure, you know, one of us wins. I could see that being a small part in the back of someone's mind for sure.
I like to think about, like, after season 43, you know, they're listening to your post game press. We can't let Owen win Survivor. I mean, he talks so positively about the 40s. We can't. You would always, one of your takes, right, was always that the 40s aren't as hard to remember. People just have to like actually focus on, they just want to say it's harder to remember who's on each season and all that.
Oh,
right?
That's funny.
You had argued that at one point, right?
I don't remember this. And that's okay. Hilarious because at the time I probably felt that way. But now that I've watched 9 seasons of the same shit,
it's too much.
It is hard to remember.
It's too much.
Like gun to your head, what season was Jason Truhl on?
But he was on 49.
Okay. Well, that was too recent, but yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like it's just like, yeah, it's all blends together. So regardless of the like format of Survivor moving forward, we need themes. Like I get, we need to stay in Fiji ever for budgetary reasons, but like, give us some themes. Word on the street is two tribes. Love that. Like there's, I'm optimistic. I think production, I've gotten the sense, has had a lot of fun with 50, and I think it's maybe revitalized them a little bit. So I choose to be optimistic about, you know, as we turn the corner into the new era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I totally agree with you. I think when we were at like 41, 42, 43, 44, you could differentiate those seasons, 45, 46, but then the problem starts being, wait, what was 41 and what was 42? Because, you know, I think about, have you been doing Survivordle?
Yes.
Yes. Right.
Sure, yeah.
So when you're doing that and it's the earlier seasons, it's like, okay, it's earlier than Samoa. You're like, okay, that means it's Tocantins, Gabon, Micronesia, China, Fiji, Cook Islands, Panama. Like you can just keep going. You know, it has to be one of those. But then the thing for me is like, and then it's like, okay, they have to be worse than 16th place. And I'm like, okay, well that could be Dolly from Vanuatu. Like, okay, great. I can do that. Like I know, but then if it's in the 40s, like I don't remember what place NECA got on your season.
Right.
And then I'm sitting here and I'm like, was NECA on 43 or am I misremembering that? And she was actually on 42. You know what I mean? And so that's where what the problem is because they're not theming it and nobody pays attention to tribe names anymore. At the end of the day, it's like Owen, Gabler, Sammy were on yellow. They were the men who were on yellow. That's what I remember. That's it. And even then it's like, I don't remember a lot of the colors, but there was no, it's not heroes versus villains. It's not brains versus brawn versus beauty. It's like, cause okay, what's the beauty tribe from Koh Rong? I can remember the beauty tribe from Koh Rong. But tell me the six people who wore yellow on 43. Most people can't do that. I could do that. I feel pretty confident in it. But most people couldn't do that. And I don't know who they would forget. I hope it's not Ellie. Because you know, I would say Ellie should come back. But
yes. She will never. She doesn't want to. But she would be great.
She would be great. And she, you know, people don't realize. Like she is... She's the thing that set that season off on the chaotic. I don't know. It's like Sandra Bullock in Gravity. That was season 43.
What a pull. That's awesome. But yeah, we're also cursed by the Fijian vocabulary. I think everything being four letter words that are phonetically similar, that makes it hard for people too. But anyway, it's all fair and valid for sure.
Unless you're Cassidy with Coco. Cause it's like, if you can't remember Cassidy was on the Coco tribe, like, I don't know what you can remember then. That's an easy one. So.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question, what's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge. They also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store that can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from five distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter are about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal's service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
All right, let's rank these players based on where you think they're going to land this week, and this will lead to us, you know, talking a little bit more about where, you know, some of my questions about these players. But I'll ask you right off the bat, who do you have as the safest person this week?
Safest person this week, I've got Joe. I see Joe, A, as someone who can win an immunity challenge. You know, that's a big thing. And then B, I think probably everybody thinks they can beat Joe. Even if people want to take a shot at whatever remnants of the Honor Integrity Alliance are left, like, I feel like he's pretty low priority. Like you were talking about earlier, like, as we're into the final seven, you know, people are thinking about who they can beat. And I feel like he's got to be high on people's lists.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good pick. But just because we're kind of coming to one of those episodes where, like, dust is going to have to settle after a little more chaos. And I do feel like this final seven vote might be a little bit more straightforward. It might not seem straightforward when the episode starts, but I think when we get to the end, it's going to be the first episode in a while where we don't have some crazy twist, where we don't have some chaos. Like, I'm going to go with Rizzo
sure
here.
Hope not. Oh, Rizzo.
I know, right? Yeah, I'm going to go with Rizzo instead of Joe. And my reason is because he has the idol. And if Suri is like, Rizzo, it's okay, it's fine, are there going to be three other people who convince Rizzo that he's also fine? And I don't know if there are, but then it's kind of like the same thing you're saying with Joe. Rizzo is somebody that seems like people want to take to the end. It does seem like from Exit Press, he's being viewed as a goat out there, or somebody to just drag along. And if that's the case, I'll go with Rizzo over Joe because Rizzo has an idol. And honestly, the people he's on the island with aren't that hard to read. Like, Devin chooses chaos more often than not. Suri, you just have to break out of her spell. Like, she's gold, but you just have to break out. And he's been so close with her so long, I think he'll know if things flip. I think he'll know, like, Suri's not acting the same way towards me. I don't think Jonathan and Joe are that hard to read. I think Tiffany's pretty straightforward. I mean, Tiffany's, you know, been a player on this season for sure, but I think her gameplay is straightforward. And then Aubrey, you know, I think, you know, she's been a little all over, but I do feel like Aubrey has some tells that are noticeable for people. So if Rizzo feels like his name's out there, I think he'll play that idol. So I'm going to put him as my safest person this week because he's got it, even though he just got rid of his closest ally, second closest ally in the game.
Mm-hmm. I like the pick, and I've got Rizzo next, you know, with the idol, with his relationship with Suri. And yeah, it's just the question of where does he go from here? I know we talked about it earlier, so don't need to rehash it, but yeah, I mean, he's in a pretty good position, but you start to get that fear of, like, is he in a good position because he's in a bad position? Which was interesting for me. Like, on my season, I knew I was in a horrible position, and I knew I was like, I have such a slim chance of winning, but I just want to make it to the end and kind of like stick it to everybody. You know, it's just like, I might as well hang around mm-hmm. if I can. So I don't think he certainly doesn't feel that way. Like, I don't think he sees like the writing on the wall, but I worry that he's like running out of runway to make something happen. So I would hate for him to have to use the idol this week, because I think he's going to need it to pull off something crazy down the stretch if he's got to, you know, pull ahead.
Yeah, if Rizzo does play his idol this week, I worry that then his game is a little bit shorter lived, especially if he plays it correctly. Like, he doesn't get the final four again. You're not going to let Rizzo play an idol successfully, get somebody out of the game, and then get to final three. Especially since he probably would be able to claim that Aussie move. Now all of a sudden he starts to get to that level where, like Owen said, it wouldn't be his only credential that Rizzo's young. It's like, dude, you played the best game. Can sell me on it at final tribal, and I will begrudgingly go up there and write down R-I-Z-G-O-D, Rizgod, baby. You know, you got to write the whole thing. You can't just write Rizgod or Rizzo.
Yeah, you need his full government on there for sure.
His government name. I love it. It actually is on his driver's license. He showed me it when we were in Ron Clark. Okay, it's Rizgod, R-I-Z-G-O-D, Rizgod, baby. So if a cop pulls him over, they say, thank you, Mr. God, Riz God baby, or something like that. Yeah,
middle name God.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm not going to be dramatic though. We have the same top two. I have Joe at two. I mean, Joe is skating through, and I hope that, I know Joe's going through it right now, and I've said this like a lot on recent podcasts. Like, we're seeing Joe posting a lot of this stuff of like, my real friends know who I am and things like that. And like, I get it. Like, he's just been beaten down now for two seasons where, you know, in 48, he lost and everybody's like, this guy didn't make his move. We all thought he was going to win. Now it's a letdown. He didn't win. And they all treat him differently for that. Now on this season, it's just been, you know, not good. I do hope that he's able to look back on this in a little bit though, and like see what it was that didn't click with people, because I still think Joe is kind of like, he's not the perfect person for New Era Survivor, but if he ever understood the strategic part of Survivor, he has everything else that would win Survivor. He just doesn't understand that it is meant to be a cutthroat game. And I actually think one of the funniest things, and me and Omer were talking about this on Thursday night, one of the funniest things would be like if Joe comes back one day and he's like, oh my God, this strategy thing is all I was missing. Like, I went and watched seasons 15 through 19. They voted out James with two idols. So Russell was an asshole. Like, I can play like that. Because if Joe ever came back and did that, man, nobody would see it coming, and he's a danger. And that's what I thought we were going to get from him this season. I thought we were going to get more of a player because Eva wasn't there. And I thought the Eva thing kind of threw off his game. In reality, the Eva thing didn't really throw off his game. It seems like that's the exact game he wanted to play. But to give credit where it's due, he did reluctantly vote for Ozzy this time. He did write down Ozzy's name to get Ozzy out of the game. So, you know, good on him for growing, at least in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like the ceiling for Joe is like a coach in South Pacific. If he could like stick the landing, you know, like if Joe were to come in and like, behind the curtain, pull some more villainous moves and be more cutthroat, he could. And like you said, he has all the tools and he's so likable. And that's why I try to be careful, because like, who knows if I'll ever physically see Joe face to face, but like, he does seem like a great guy. But yeah, just his code and the way he approaches the game just doesn't mesh with today's like fast pace, like super fluid gameplay. But you could easily see him winning, like, you know, Africa or something. Like, there's easily, like, he's an early, like the blueprint of like a, you know, old school Survivor winner. But I hope he's doing okay. Like truly, he seems like a really sweet guy. And that is always, there seems to be a lot of hurt feelings this year and this season. And it's like, on one hand, as a fan, it's like very juicy and like, ooh, like, love it. But on the other, as an alum, as a past player, as someone who like relatively didn't have too hard of a time, like, I can't imagine that like going back, like, you're so excited to go back and then it goes poorly or you're received differently. Like, that's got to suck. Like, I do feel for everybody who's kind of going through it.
I think what's also tough is they all had the high of being asked back for 50. Yeah. And you get that final call of, not only did we call you and you go through the process, you're going to be on the show. That moment, you're seeing the flashing lights, man. You're on the red carpet and bulbs are popping because you're just like, I did it. I'm going to get to cement my place in Survivor history.
You know, whether you've been the first, whether you're Jenna Lewis, who's saying, I'm going to finish this cycle, season one to 50, I'm going to win season 50. It's going to be this great thing. Everybody got that call and went out there with that narrative. And now they're all seeing the negative side of it. Yeah. And 50, and I'm seeing this in our comments and, like, you know, just in Tegwith sent us a great one yesterday where somebody called her a bigot. And we were just dying laughing over that, where we're like, yeah, Tegwith of all people, this like renowned bigot in the community. And so
cancelable. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, everybody's always talking about, like, man, she's just the worst. But, you know, we were talking about that. And it's like, because there's so many more eyes on 50, there's so many more eyes that aren't used to watching Survivor on 50 and aren't really a part of this community. But then those eyes are turning into mouths. And it's just people that haven't watched. They don't even know who you are, Owen. They're sitting here watching this episode. Right. You're not going, I didn't watch 43, and nobody from 43 is on this season, so I have to go back and watch 43. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it's very interesting now that we're seeing that. And I think that's why it's also hitting some of these people harder, because, you know, even for Jonathan, like 42, him coming off the show, his cast had a lot to say about him. Other people had a lot to say about him, but now it's like, yo, Jonathan, like, you didn't deal with a quarter of what you're dealing with now on 50. Mm-hmm. Like, people are, there's so many more eyes, and it's showing in the ratings. It's showing everywhere. And I think that's leading to more negativity, and just a lot of people like are having a hard time dealing with it. Cause also, look, these are the people who made 50. Your ego's never going to be more inflated than saying, hey, I was one of the 24 people to make Survivor season 50.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you said that all beautifully. And it honestly, it makes me, as someone who would have loved to play again, like, it almost makes me be like, huh, like, the grass isn't so bad on this side of it, you know, because obviously there's, like, the what ifs and, oh my God, what could have happened? Or, like, what do they, you wonder and you dream about and you think about it. It's like, I'd rather be where I'm sitting right now than be like Chrissy or someone who got a terrible edit and, you know, didn't do that great. And just, like, people didn't like me as much. Like, you'd almost rather just live with the question of, like, how would it go versus, like, oh, it happened and it went terribly. Like, I feel bad for Charlie. You know, his edit was so one note. Like, there's people who, you know, you'd almost rather be remembered in the Survivor history books as, like Jesse, one of the best who have never won. You know, if he never plays again, we'll always have that question. Like, man, Jesse won, like, legendary first performance, like, a really great player. And then, like, if he had come back on 50 and gotten booted out third or whatever, you know, then that question would be answered. So, you know, there's pros and cons to both for sure. But I hope people, I'm so excited for the reunion, and I hope there is some healing for some people and they get their flowers and they hear more positivity. And yeah, it bums me out a little, but, you know, as a TV lover, like, it's juicy, man. I do enjoy it to an extent.
We need the drama. Look, the new era, you know, most of you guys get along, and that's a good thing. But, like, you know, even on the show, it's no, we want our people that you love to hate. We want the people that you love to love. We want the people that you just hate. Like, you want that mix. But I don't know. I feel like what we're doing right now on Patreon, we watch the seasons in order, right? And we just got to Koh-Rong. And what's very interesting is watching social media start to come into Survivor. And Worlds Apart, Jeff thought was going to be such a great season. And because it was so negative with the characters, they had to change the way they cast. But what's funny is they had already cast Koh-Rong, because Koh-Rong's supposed to come out before Cambodia. Mm-hmm. So Koh-Rong's cast looks just like Worlds Apart's cast. But then if you start to watch 33 on, the casts get much nicer. And I know Island of the Idols is in there, but that's a different story. But if you start to watch, like, Millennials versus Gen X, much more positive first timers. Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, with the exception of really Alan Ball and Joe Mena, they weren't really cast. And even Joe Mena, like, if you've ever met Joe Mena, he's the normal guy. He just went out there and his strategy was to be an idiot. Like, his literal strategy, I think he says at one point, is, if I'm unlikable enough, I'll get to the end and I can tell everybody it was part of my strategy. It's like, that's crazy. You're a suicide bomber, but okay. And then you look at, like, the way they went through the rest of those seasons, and it's more positive. It's less focus on the villains, even the villains that were there. Like, Angelina's a fun villain. Like, she's not your Russell villain. She's a villain just because she's doing things that are driving you crazy. But I don't know. It's very interesting to see, like, how the show has evolved
And so now it's almost like the audience looks for things that make people villainous, even when they're not necessarily being villainous. And that's where the negativity comes in. And I don't remember how I got on this point, but I got there somehow. Last thing I want to say to you before we go to our number three is I think your comparison of Joe to Coach is brilliant. And a lot of people will think that's not really good, but who ever thought that Coach would ever have a chance to win after seasons 18 or 20? And then he comes out for 23 and like very well could have won that season. Like he was so close. He just did not, he just fumbled at the 1 yard line. Like that was a very short turnaround, you know? So yeah, I don't know. I think Joe's
it's doable. It's doable. We'll see.
All right. Who do you have at three?
Three in terms of safety. I think I was a little torn here. I think I've got Jonathan. I was torn between two people here. And, you know, Jonathan to me is actually playing really well. We've seen, you know, he's like, he's honored integrity passing, but he's got a very like, he's scheming much more than I recall from 42. And maybe I'm not remembering all he did on the season, but he felt at the time much more one note. But here you can see he's playing the game. He's, you know, planting seeds of lies that then end up making things happen. Like I've honestly been very impressed with Jonathan in his gameplay. So on one hand, that could make him a threat, but I think people don't see it. And I think people, you know, to them, he's just kind of a big body. I think this power broker advantage, I don't even think it like hurt his game in a way that it's like, you know, it's not like he has an idol or like it, he created such a big stir that now people are pissed off at him or have him front of mind. Like I think Devin's has that stain on him kind of in perpetuity. So I do think he could emerge as a name that comes up, but I think a combination of edit positioning and just how he's been playing of late, I do think he'd be able to like continue to play double agent and wiggle his way through another vote, even if there is kind of a move against him or that. And I know the sides are kind of dissolving anyway, but yeah.
They are, but I think that's a really like fair argument of like he didn't do anything to put himself in the position he was in last week. Like he won immunity. How many players have won immunity? Like so many players have won immunity and they don't get this crazy positioning. So he got put in this position. Did he make the most of it? I think he did. I do think that he ultimately made the right decisions here, getting rid of Ozzy after the fact of like keeping Suri in the game. So it's, you know, a little bit different there. You know, you can keep the doors open and say, Suri, look, I could have gotten rid of you. I could have, but I didn't. And so I think he keeps around a really big threat. He still has a shot. But yeah, like how are people going to view him? Because he won immunity and ended up being maybe the luckiest person to ever win immunity ever.
Right.
Because now he gets to run around.
Yeah, crazy advantage. I didn't hate it, but like what a reward for standing on one leg for 20 seconds. Like, goodness gracious. Yeah.
Yeah. And my favorite thing is, look, Tiffany did not pick her foot up on time. That's clear. It's very clear that the judges were right. But Tiffany outlasts Jonathan if she does pick her foot up on time. And that's even the more frustrating. It's like Jonathan's not supposed to be in that position. It's supposed to be Tiffany.
Yeah, he's too big for that shit. That's, yeah.
He's won it twice now.
Yeah, crazy.
Crazy. My number three, I'm going to go with Aubrey. I'm reading the edit. I don't care. I'm doing it. I mean, she's just, they're trying to give her credit for what happened last week. And I'm not saying she didn't do anything, but she was the one who was going home and she's the one who had to do the convincing. And Ozzy gave her info and she just went and spilled it to everybody. Like, that's not some crazy mastermind game. It's the smart move and she did the right thing. But it's not like she went out of her way. She's getting screen time even when she doesn't need it. I said a couple weeks, I've been saying really since early on, I'm like, could this be the Michelle Corong edit? And now I'm like, this is the Corong Michelle edit. And I
with
just feel like
back to Michelle and Corong within the Michelle and Corong edit.
It's crazy. Like it's, there's so many layers to this. This is the onion. Right. But yeah, I'm going with Aubrey at three. I feel like I would be shocked with the edit Aubrey has gotten if she's not in the finale. How are you giving this person a confessional in every episode when they really haven't had to be impactful on any of the votes? And then you're not going to make the finale. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. I've got Aubrey next on my list. I've got her fourth for very similar reasons. Her and Jonathan, I remember taking note again. I think it was that week 9 where I podcasted with Steven, because that was the first time in the season I've like watched an episode multiple times, and like they were checking in with them when they didn't really need to, like you said. Yeah. And it's her story, and I was maybe a little harsh on her at the beginning. Like, she seemed pretty just like, I don't know if aloof is the right word, but her head wasn't really in the game. And it was that week 9 where I felt like a switch flipped for her. And, you know, she seems pretty locked in now. And I thought the strangest edit bit was last week it was this week at the top of this episode after the coin flip, when they got back and she's like, I love it when people do what you want them to do. And like, it was being presented in a way that like, she schemed her way in. Yes, exactly. Giving Aubrey edit credit for Devin's doing the coin flip was ridiculous.
That's Daryl's more. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't quote me on that, but no, it was strange. I definitely took note of that. I was like, seemed like he was going to do that either way. I don't know if like you were pulling the strings on that one, Aubrey. So, but all that being said, I do think it was very wise of her to link up with Jonathan and build that bridge when she did, kind of get away from the Christian Devin's Emily trio. You know, she's very, you know, the way Jonathan is honor and integrity presenting, she is very nerd presenting. And so I think, you know, building an inroads to the other side at that point was very, very wise of her. It's allowed her to push information back and forth. And she's playing really well, I think. And I'm curious how it goes. But yeah, I easily see her in the final episode.
And that even goes back to the Michelle and Korong edit. One of the biggest winning moments of Michelle's game was the Jason reward. And that's like, how is Michelle bonding with Jason? There's no reason that this should be happening. And that moment where the two of them are on their award and they really bond, I think that's what sets off Scott, Jason, mm-hmm. Julia all saying, no, Michelle gets my vote. And Michelle ultimately wins that 5-2 because what, it's Joe and Sydney or something. I forget exactly who it is. I know Joe votes mm-hmm. for Aubrey, but you know, you look at that, and that is what we're seeing Aubrey do. And they've made such an emphasis, because Aubrey is known as a strategist and she hasn't done anything strategically really this season, but you're seeing the social game. Why are they showing us her with Tiffany when they're not showing us Tiffany and Ceree, even though Tiffany and Ceree seem like they're locked in? And it reminds me of Ben in 46, where like they kept showing Ben very close with Kenzie. But if you ask Ben in real life, he's like, no, Charlie's my best friend. Of course I vote for Charlie to win at the end. But it was almost like that's what they had to do to build up Kenzie's winner edit, was be like, look at these great things she's done for Ben. And Ben would be like, dude, everybody was helping me out. Like, it wasn't Kenzie. And that feels like what's happening with Aubrey here. She's getting credit for all of these relationships. And that might be the story they're trying to tell. And we know that the Survivor editors have a really hard time telling the story of a social winner. It's very difficult for them.
Yeah, speaking from my season, for sure, I definitely co-sign that. It's hard. It's hard to besides like people like Ceree or whatever, like channeling likability through the screen in a way that you really capture someone's essence that way is such a challenge. So yeah, I think I'd be pretty content with an Aubrey win, particularly if it is in this more social style. Because to me, like if you think about 50 being like a celebration or like an evolution, or like thinking about you want the winner to have like, you know, had an arc in some way, I do think that would be pretty neat for her to like, you know, to having lost to a social winner to become a social winner, I think would be pretty cool. Same way I would love if like Mike Holloway came back and was like a super strategic winner or something. Yeah. Like just the counterpoint would be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. I have Jonathan at 4. I don't need to say more about Jonathan. Like, I completely agree with you. I've talked a lot about Jonathan on this podcast recently. I think he's playing a great game, and I think he's got some votes on that jury. We had a comment on the last episode that was like, you guys, you're missing that Jonathan doesn't have enough jury votes. Like, he's going to lose 7-4. And my whole argument is just that Jonathan has jury votes. That's my argument. Like, the question is, can he do anything in the final 7 to get himself the winning edit? Like, can he get that 6th jury vote? I think, though, there's a realistic chance he's sitting there at final 3 with 4 or 5 jury votes, like legitimately 4 or 5.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's necessarily pissed anybody off. I think if he's able to verbalize the way he evolved his game and the way he was able to, like, you know, get the tide turning on Stephanie and things like that, like, yeah, he's got a chance for sure. And edit-wise, yeah, he's in the mix, certainly. So we do have the same bottom 3. I've got Tiffany next.
Same boat.
Yep.
And, you know, I see Tiffany, the way Tiffany goes out to me is if they want to take a shot at Ceree, but they take the safer option and go for her number two. I mean, a lot of it hinges on Rizzo and like how they're perceived and how, like, who is Ceree's number one. But like you were saying, it really seems like Tiffany and Ceree are locked in. And I really, it's a shame that they haven't told that story. Like, I thought there was something beautiful about how on Game Changers, Ceree was talking about her relationship with Michaela and she saw a younger version of herself. And I thought that was a nice representation arc and a way to explain, like, hey, like having more than one Black woman on a season is important to these players and can lead to like different relationships and arcs that we don't always see on Survivor. And I would have loved to see like the explanation of how they got so close, because that's also a testament to the way Tiffany's been playing, because she was like really on the bottom, you know, after what Dee and Camilla went home. Like, Tiffany could have been easy pickings. So that being said, from a storytelling standpoint, unfortunately to me, she's not reading as a winner. I am glad that she has made it further this time. Although I guess if she goes, did she get eighth last time?
She got eighth. So she has made it further.
She has made it further. Good for her. And I hope the train doesn't stop here, but I do see a potential, like, even though Ceree doesn't have an idol, I could see like a vote split or a ricochet or like some sort of like, we can't shoot at Ceree now, we can always get Ceree later. Tiffany's an immunity threat. Ceree's not. So yeah, I am a bit worried for Tiff here.
Yeah. And my thing is, the edit makes me less confident that she'll make the finale, but then the edit also makes me think, why is there any reason to think that Tiffany can win? So why would you get rid of her before Ceree or Devins? Like, you have to get rid of Ceree or Devins before you get rid of Tiffany. But then the edit is like been so rough that I'm like, well, maybe she's the one who goes out right before the finale. And that's why her edit's rough. Because look, Tiffany was my 24th most excited to see. I think we did a ranking of how excited you were to see players. She's my 24th. And the thing is, it's not that I don't like Tiffany. Tiffany was my winner pick for 46. Like, I'm all about that. And she went out with an idol. I understand that. But my thing with Tiffany was, why 50? That was my question. Like, there's so many legends of this game. Why Tiffany? And now I've officially like come around to the point of like, why is the edit not telling us the game that Tiffany is playing? Because it's not. And honestly, I don't feel like it's really telling us the story of how a lot of these people are playing. So why is it in particular avoiding Tiffany's edit? Because when I see Tiffany and Ceree sitting on the log together and Emily's coming over to them to tell them this Aussie plan, there's a reason Emily's confident enough to do that. And there's a reason Ceree's confident enough to turn to Tiffany and say, is she out of her mind? And there's a reason Tiffany's confident enough to say whatever. Why are we not hearing the Tiffany portion? Why was it Tiffany is Aubrey's sidekick and now she's just kind of doing her thing? And she is a good confessional giver. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because she goes out right before the finale. I would be surprised if she did, but then I'm also like, if Tiffany goes out here, the final six for this finale with the edits that we've gotten make a lot of sense, because you get rid of Tiffany's, like, she had two in the whole pre-merge. It's terrible.
Yeah. It was a rough edit at the beginning. I wonder, maybe she gets idled out. Like, maybe she's who Rizzo takes out to take out Ceree's new number one or something. But yeah, it's a shame. She probably wasn't my least excited, but I'm happy for her that she's played so well. And I'm a little disappointed for her at the same time that her story hasn't been told. Cause like I'm sure she came in with a chip on her shoulder. I'm sure she saw people saying, oh, she's only there cause Q was there. Like, but I think she has shown what a legitimate, strong, amazing player she is. And she's a challenge beast. And yeah, like you said, great confessionalist. And we might need to zoom through these. I hear the baby crying a little bit.
Oh, so, God. All right. Here we go.
Yeah.
We're at the final two anyway. So this is good. I'll just say mine quick. I had Devin 6, Ceree at 7. Look, I've talked back and forth the whole time about Devin's and Ceree and you know, why I think they're the biggest threats and everything. I think with Ozzy gone, I look, Devin's my preseason winner pick. I just need him to get to the finale just so I can say that when this cast was originally announced on like May 15th, I believed in Rick Devins and he made the finale. But what order do you have it? Do you have the same or different?
Different, actually. I have Devins as most likely to go this week just because he's been so top of mind. And I do think there is the, and I know this like went counter, I contradicted myself when I had Tiffany in the third to last slot, but Devins is more of an immunity threat than Ceree. Devins is, I guess, potentially more of a fire threat. And he's just been like, and speaking from experience, like once someone's name is out there,
it's so easy to just keep saying it over and over. And he's been a target this whole time. He's been an option this whole time. And I'm sure everyone is aware that Ceree has to go at some point, and she's like been playing such a good game. And like, you know, but it was like me with Jesse, honestly. In my head, I was like, I can always beat Jesse in a challenge and beat him at Fire. Like I wasn't concerned about that, even though I knew I couldn't beat him at the end. I was like, I can get him later if I need to. Like, we'll get Carla out before Jesse, mm-hmm. because Carla could maybe win immunity. So that's why I have Devin's more likely to go than Ceree. But I just want Ceree to win so bad. I just like, that would be so satisfying, not only just from like thinking about her whole Survivor career, how well she played on Australia versus the World. Like, I know she's already won the Traitors, like, but still, just like, for that to happen and to do it in such a dominating way. And what's impressed me most about Ceree too is like, everyone knows how dangerous she is. Like, every time she comes back, she's more dangerous than the previous time, because each time she does so well on a new show, that makes her subsequent appearance that much more like dangerous. And yet she's able to just like, it's unreal. Like, have you met her, Phil? Have you spent any time with
Ceree? I actually have. Every time I'm in the same room as her, there's a line that's meeting Mickey Mouse at Disney World, man. It's just impossible. You can't do it.
I mean, for good reason, but man, I'll tell you, just her, she is just one of the most charming people I've ever met in my entire life. There's just, you know, they talk about Ceree's mist or whatever, but it's so true. Just some of those people, some people just have that, like,
yeah,
just that inherent charisma that is just like off the charts, and she's got it. So I would love for her to pull it out, but I fear it's not going to happen. Oh, and did you see Dalton Ross pointed out there's a world where Ceree gets advantage get end last week?
Oh, I know. It would have been,
yeah, if she had been with the idol holders and Jonathan, she would have gone home. And that's just, or she could have, that would have been so bad.
Well, and another thing that could have happened last week is if Aubrey hadn't thrown her idol away, you could have potentially had all four idols on the same beach plus Jonathan. And then what happens? Just nobody goes home.
Oh God.
And you know, like we talked about, two people were always guaranteed with idols to be on the same group. It was always guaranteed that at least two, because there's only two groups and there's three idols. So there's gotta be two. So more than half of the people could be immune, which makes it even crazier that Ozzy went home in that situation, but they're not super idols. So you still have to play them. But if one person plays them, the other probably plays it too. And that's when you get the hashtag idol train, like we got in a season called Game Changers. So you don't think Ceree can pull it out. So last question I ask you before you go run over to the baby, I get it. Who do you think pulls it out? Who is the winner?
Oh, my heart says Ceree, but my head says, I'm torn between Jonathan and Aubrey. I think Aubrey. I think I have to go Aubrey. Just because, like, thinking about her edit and the way they're telling the story, I feel like it is a little more positive than Jonathan's. Like, Jonathan is doing more, I think would be fair to say, like, the way he's playing. But I think the way they're checking in, it's giving Winter Edit to me a bit more for Aubrey, because it feels more, certain moments have felt less necessary for the storytelling of that episode, but perhaps more necessary for the storytelling of the entire season. Yeah, so
agreed.
It's truly a 50-50. Well, not 50-50, because there's, I'm holding out hope Ceree can pull it out. But yeah, it's close. It's close. But I'll say Aubrey for the sake of
Aubrey and Jonathan are splitting the 1% you have left over. They have the 0.5% each.
So. Right.
All right, everybody. Well, Owen, thank you so much for joining. Appreciate you taking time out. You know, I love that we were able to make this happen. Somehow my movers left right before, and we were able to land this at the ultimate sweet spot on the Saturday.
Yeah. The stars aligned.
They really did. You have, the guy who was moving was like, what's the worst part about having the podcast? I was like, today's scheduling. This is insane. we were thinking we could do 1 o'clock. They didn't leave till 5:15. So here we are. But this is always a pleasure to have you on. I love talking Survivor with you. It's always one of my favorite things. And hopefully we see a 43 player at some point in the future, man. Because we just got to get the
name. Yeah, man. We'll see. Give us second chance too. Give us blood versus water or whatever. I'll take any. I'd love to go back, honestly. But at the same time, you know, it's, my life is good. I'll be fine if I never play again. But man, Survivor's fun. It's
who's baby? Who's babysitting if you and Sammy are on blood versus water?
Ooh. Good question. I guess we'd have to leave her with grandparents, I guess. But yeah, Sammy would demolish me on Blood versus Water. She'd cook for sure. But yeah, that. Man, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me. Sorry, I got to run, but we'll You're catch up soon, I hope. But yeah, man, I'm glad we worked this out. It was awesome. And thank you to everyone who watched live, and hope y'all have a good weekend. Call your mother. And yeah, appreciate y'all.
Catherine Fenwick out there in New Zealand. Thank you, Owen and Phil. Everybody, like the video, subscribe to the channel, patreon.com/thespecialist. And we'll see you on Tuesday. I think our next episode is Tuesday, or Tag With might be Monday. I honestly, I don't even know what day it is. So we'll see you all next time. Thank you, Owen. Like the video, subscribe to the channel. We're out of here.